Welcome to the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing podcast. I'm host Sarah McGuinness. The Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, or RO, helps leaders to be change makers and to create better workplaces. With a community of champions from organizations around the globe, RO is dedicated to helping you to develop your professional expertise, access practical tools and resources, and network with peers and experts to meaningfully improve wellbeing. These interviews are recorded as part of our monthly Wellbeing Wednesday webinars and are designed to inspire, share ideas, and raise awareness of important issues we can all take action on. Auckland Transport is a large, complex public organisation with a wide range of physical and psychosocial risks to manage. This interview was recorded in mid-2023 when we were joined by Auckland Transport's then People Experience Lead, Jessica Hayes, to take a look at their wellbeing strategy and some of the award-winning initiatives they had rolled out over the previous years. We'll also look at the process of developing an effective wellbeing strategy and how to bring it to life.
Like many others, I didn't always intend to work in wellbeing. I think lots of my network colleagues have sort of just landed into wellbeing roles, probably through our sort of passion and eagerness to increase wellbeing in the workplace. So I stepped into an HR role probably 5 or 6 years ago, but more in the sort of HR systems administration sort of space. And then a couple of years ago, landed in a people experience role, which was definitely sort of ignited my passion around ensuring that our people have the best experiences at work. And that sort of then developed into a bit of a wellbeing space role when I could sort of help out with the strategy of the wellbeing program at AT and how that was going to look for our people, and just ensuring that the whole experience was looked after for our people. So right from the moment that they're joining the organisation, all their transitions when they're with us and then when they leave as well.
Yeah. And when you started moving into that space, was it something that the leadership group had endorsed, or was it something that you had started to move into and that became a natural progression?
A little bit of both. Like, we always had someone at AT that was looking after wellbeing, and then they left the organisation. So there's a little bit of a gap in that space. So, because of my passion and my willingness to help out in that area, I sort of, just adopted it, I guess, which was a bit of a natural progression, but very grateful for it in the long run.
I think there are lots of people across the wellbeing community who've had a similar position of a passion and drive, and that's how they've landed in the role.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So tell us about AT. Tell us about Auckland Transport. What's the complexity of the nature of the work that you do? Business does.
Yeah. So Auckland Transport is incredibly complex. Like you said at the beginning, I think when most Aucklanders think of AT, they just think of buses or parking tickets, but actually, it's so much more than that. So we look after the regions right across Tamaki and Makaurau, all of the transport, excluding state highways. So that's all of the cycleways, footpaths, roads, then everything out on the harbour. We've got our harbour master. There's a whole lot of logistical complexities that come in with that as well. Obviously, the trains and the buses as well. We don't directly hire the train drivers and the bus drivers, but obviously we have to work very closely alongside both of those partners as well. So, there's a lot going on. We've got people spread right across the region in different workplaces. We've got people out on the front line that don't have access to laptops and things, which adds more complexity when we're trying to roll out different initiatives. So, we've got such a diverse range of people doing a diverse range of tasks.
It's a really good way of summarizing that diversity across the business. So perhaps let's start with what have been some of the challenges right from day one around rolling out wellbeing, or not even what rolling out wellbeing, but what just are some of the wellbeing challenges that people are up against?
Lots of challenges at Auckland Transport in the space. I guess AT has always been very fortunate that wellbeing is a strategic spotlight of our organisation. So we've always had that, I guess, executive and senior leadership buy-in, which has been super imperative to the success of our program. But some challenges and things that come into play, throughout COVID, that's definitely highlighted and sort of been a catalyst for a lot of issues and things in the workplace. So that's been a massive driver of why we sort of refreshed our wellbeing program. Leadership plays a massive part in it. I'm sure everyone else can agree in the organization that's sort of a bit of a make or break when you're sort of rolling out initiatives and programs. So we've got some incredible leaders at AT, don't get me wrong, but it's just ensuring that they've all got that capability that, yeah, when we've got new leaders stepping in, they know exactly what they need to be doing. And then hybrid working, that's another one, which is sort of another bit of a spanner in the works. Yeah, love hybrid working, but then we need to figure out how we can ensure that we're looking after our people's well-being, both at work and, yeah, wherever else they may be working, at home or elsewhere.
And I imagine some of the challenge you mentioned that, say, bus drivers, train drivers aren't direct employees of AT, but are you finding that's an extension of the work that you do?
Yeah, it's definitely, we are really closely with those partners. And I mean, it's our brand that's out there. So at the end of the day, everyone associates that with Auckland Transport. And so, yeah, we do need to ensure that their wellbeing is looked after. So we do work in partnership with everything that's going on. So threats and aggression, there's a lot of work going on around that at the moment. That's definitely a big challenge right across New Zealand, not just AT, figuring out how we can really best look after our people that are out there.
Awesome. And I want to dig into that one in a bit, but let's dial it right back to tell us about the wellbeing journey that AT has been on. What's it look like from day one?
Yeah. So day one with me in the role, I guess. So wellbeing isn't a new concept at AT. We've always had a really strong program. We've always had really cool people leading the work. But when I took this over in mid-2021, we decided that we needed to do a bit of a refresh of wellbeing at AT. I think prior to that, if we had asked people at AT, what does AT do for your wellbeing, they might be able to say sick days or EAP or a few different things, but they didn't actually quite feel the connection around all of the different things that AT does. And AT does, yeah, we're very fortunate that we have quite an extensive program. So, yeah, and I think it must have been August 2021, just as Auckland was about to go into lockdown, we decided to, we decided to launch our program. So we had to pivot to do everything online. That's when we did our big launch, and we partnered with Groove as well. They're one of our big wellbeing providers. And that's sort of when we put a stake in the ground and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is sort of our current state of wellbeing, where we want to get to, what our different priorities are, and how we're going to get there. We did a lot of work around branding. Might seem like a bit of a silly thing to be focusing on, but we really found that we needed to elevate wellbeing at AT to make sure that everyone knew where to find everything, knew what communications were associated with wellbeing. That's something that's been really successful for us. And then, I guess fast forward sort of 18, 20 months, we're sort of at this position now where I would say pretty confidently that everyone knows about wellbeing at AT. They understand the brand, they understand the program, where they need to go to find out more information. But now we're sort of at that crux point where we need to actually really focus on embedding wellbeing. We've done enough sort of talk about it and, brought everyone on this journey so far, but we need to actually make it a part of the everyday.
And with some of those communications, did you have some key messages that you kept coming back to?
So many communications. I guess now it'd be a good point to reference that me, we, us model, which we've spoken about quite a bit. So that's a big component of our frameworks. I'm not sure if everyone on the call has come across that. I think most people I've spoken to have come across it, but they've just might not have called it the me, we, us model. But that was just a way for us to break down in those communications, especially around the me is like the individual, what role do they have to play in their own wellbeing? What are they accountable for, and how can we empower people to look after their own wellbeing? But then also the we is the team that people sit in, acknowledging that leadership plays a massive part in someone's wellbeing journey at AT. And then the us is the organisation as a whole, so ensuring that AT has a wellbeing framework and program in place. We have all of the policies, we have all of those big things. So that was a big part of our comms, was sort of always referring back to that model, not necessarily calling it out like that because it would get pretty dry, but just showing people different ways that they can get involved in wellbeing at AT, and sort of the why of why we're doing this. And at the end of the day, we want to ensure our people can come to work, they can be safe, they can go home safe, they're able to thrive and be the best.
So with the, I mean, the me examples were, you know, have been some really good, strong ones. And actually, I'm also thinking, are there some really good sort of examples you can give for each of those levels about some of the initiatives and things you've put in place?
Yep, tough question.
Sorry.
I guess for me, so the one thing we've done is with Groove, our partnership with Groove, they've got an app, which is an easy way for people to download their app, sign in with their AT email address, and access a whole raft of information. And there's a whole heap of apps and different things out there. So that's just one way that individuals can start looking after their own well-being. We also encourage individuals to put time in their diaries to have meeting-free blocks so that they can actually do focus work, go for walking meetings, that type of thing. For the WE component for leadership, we've done a whole heap of leadership capability work on different modules of how people can, how leaders can create psychological safety in their teams, how people can lead and have these conversations around mental well-being and make sure that they're equipped to have those conversations. We can't just throw a leader into a leadership position and expect them to sort of know all of this. And then the us, yeah, I guess having our whole order program and our framework in place is the big one around that, but also something that we've just recently launched is wellbeing rituals. So that's essentially wellbeing habits. It's just ways that people can integrate wellbeing into the everyday. A company-wide habit that we're trying to roll out is the 50-25-minute meeting movement. Super, super simple. We just got our IT team to turn on that function in Outlook. And so now every meeting that someone books that's an hour long defaults to 50 minutes. So people can override it back to an hour if they're very protective over that time. But we try to encourage people to at least make the meetings slightly shorter so then people can have a bathroom break, go get a coffee, and try to reduce that back-to-back meeting culture, because that's something AT has quite a lot of meetings. So yeah, that's something that's been quite successful, but we just need people to actually just continue with that.
I love that idea. That's almost that workplace design, isn't it? So you could send out a communication to everyone saying, we recommend everyone does 50-minute meetings, but unless you actually have the secondary bit to back that up, then you're asking people to make the behavior change rather than not enforcing it necessarily, but making it super simple for them to live.
Yeah, no, it was actually quite effective when we rolled it out. It was probably almost 18 months ago. And usually when you do a whole company-wide change, even in something so small like that, you get quite a lot of noise and feedback on it. But I think we only had a couple of people say that they didn't love that. But once they found out that they could actually override it and they could change it back to a 30-minute meeting, then
yeah, they're much happier. So actually, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, as in any organization, there's often pushback around wellbeing things, and it's often because there are business priorities that are putting pressure on people. I mean, that's what we tend to see. So I suppose, A, what's your experience with that been? And then B, what are some of the things that you've been able to do to help people on the journey and to prioritize wellbeing?
Sorry, what was the first part of that question?
What are some of the, I guess, the pushback that you've had, or what are some of the things that you've found, your experiences around pushback? And then, what are some of the things that you've tried?
Yeah, I guess pushback, there's so much going on, especially at Auckland. All other organisations, but Auckland Transport has so much going on. And so prioritisation is pretty difficult when there's so many different teams doing so many different important things. So trying to get wellbeing on the radar of all our people, but leaders especially, has been quite a battle at times. I think we just need to show, it all comes back down to the people experience. If our people aren't turning up to work, being able to complete their jobs, and they're not going to be able to complete everything else that is going on. So sorry, I forgot the second part of your question.
What are some of the things that you've tried that have worked to get leaders engaged or to prioritize?
Because wellbeing is so unique to everyone, we can't just roll out something and say this is going to fix it. So we've had to, one of our key priorities of our strategy was all around human-centered design and actually caring for our people and what they actually want. And then in saying that, then actually trialing different things, because we don't want to just roll out a whole heap of things, invest all of this money, and then it doesn't work. So I guess a few different things. We've got our whole order hub, which is just a SharePoint site, which is your sort of one-stop shop for all wellbeing information. So that's been a success. So that we're sort of navigating everyone to go to that one site. We've got our monthly wellbeing newsletter. So we had to persuade our comms team that it would be a good idea for us to have our own wellbeing channel and to get that out, because we're finding that all of our wellbeing information was getting lost amongst all of the other digital noise. People get emails and delete emails. They don't read a whole heap of things. So we decided to condense all of that wellbeing information, I guess, like exactly like your weekly newsletter. We decided to do it monthly, and that's been really effective for us as well. And then just different ways of how we're actually engaging with our people. So we're trying to push Yammer at AT. It's very early days. Most of the time it's just the wellbeing squad announcing things, but that's definitely starting to cause some discussion amongst the business. But then we've got to be really mindful again of that huge workforce that's frontline, and they don't have access to digital. They don't have their own laptop that they can access. So we're having to try different things like old school posters. That's quite effective in their hubs and things, because they come in and for their morning briefings, but ensuring that leaders know all about everything that's going on, so then they can sort of pass that on. So it's kind of a long-winded way of answering your question, but it's been a lot of trial and error to try and figure out what is working for our people and how we can iterate.
Yeah, and actually it's really interesting because I see those questions come through in the chat. It was one of the questions that I had as well, was around engaging with those who are not in front of laptops. And we get this question often, when you've got staff who are out in the field doing whatever it is, they don't necessarily have access to company phones or laptops. How do you engage with them? How do you also collect their feedback as well and get the information two-way?
I guess a disclaimer, we haven't nailed it. So if anyone has any other ideas, I'm definitely keen to know as well. We've figured out that every single day, especially sort of our parking and transport clients, people come in for a morning briefing before they actually go out on the network. So that's a good opportunity for us to be able to target those people. Some a little bit ruthless, but that's sort of the captive audience. And so that's where we can ensure that their leaders are able to pass on different information, that we can get some of our external providers to come in and do a 10, 15-minute sort of whirlwind session on some of the support that's available. And then, like I said, the posters and actually having physical things in their workplaces where they're coming back at the end of the day and in their lunch breaks, that they can access that. That's still a big opportunity for us to really nail how we're actually engaging with that group.
Actually, so I wanted to go back to the leadership piece too, because I guess this is the other trend that we see across organisations, where when the organisation gets a wellbeing person, then suddenly there can be a misconception that that wellbeing person is going to do the wellbeing stuff, and so therefore leaders don't really have to do it. Is that something that you've experienced? And what are some of the things that you've been working on to help leaders take more ownership? And I guess probably I'm asking these long questions. The third part of it is, I was thinking, do you find leaders come to you now with, I'm having trouble in my team, can you give me some guidance around that?
Yeah, yes and no. I guess at AT, so I lead our cross-functional wellbeing squad. So we've got people that are in there from HR, which is where wellbeing sits at AT, and then people from our safety team, someone who's on the call, and also from our customer experience team. So that's a way to sort of try and break down the silos and to reach out into those other areas. We haven't quite nailed that in terms of resourcing and capacity and things yet either, but that's definitely a sort of a step in the right direction. So that's not, ideally not all falling on one person in HR and one person sort of pushing that out. We've got also a cool model at AT where we employ two full-time wellbeing consultants. So they sort of act as like an in-house EAP, so they're both trained counsellors. They are completely confidential, free service for our people to use. People can book in one-on-one sessions with them. Leaders access them a lot if they've got something going on, like you said, if they're noticing stress or anxiety in their teams and they're wanting to survey that or find a way of how they can deal with that, they'll most likely use our wellbeing consultant. So, we're so, so fortunate to have that dedicated resource, because I guess then in my role I'm more focused on strategy and rolling out the program and different initiatives, but our wellbeing consultants are the more sort of technical wellbeing people that are able to actually have one of those confidential conversations. And that's exactly like EAP. We don't see any of those details at all. They're bound by their code of ethics. We see things like trends and utilization, but yeah, that's sort of as far as it goes. So,
you know, one of the challenges recently for Auckland obviously has been all the flooding. Are you noticing that with some of these more extreme events, you're having, like you mentioned with COVID earlier, with some pivoting, are you finding that your strategy does have to pivot a lot, or is it relatively static now in terms of continuing to roll things out and making sure you've got that foundation there?
A bit of both, I think, because we've launched our strategy, a year and a half, coming up 2 years ago, it's needing a bit of a refresh again. We've sort of ticked off a lot of the priorities in that, which has been awesome. So we need something to take that forward into the future. But yeah, when there's big weather events and sort of unplanned work come in, that definitely does play a part on what we're doing. For example, we've had a lot of people involved in our sort of incident management teams, both at AT and right across the Auckland response. And so we need to work with them around their wellbeing, ensuring that we're transitioning them back into BAU. So it is a bit of a juggling act, trying to figure out what to focus on at any one time. But I guess we've got pretty strong foundations now that lots of that BAU can sort of happen, and then we can that can sort of happen while we're pivoting in the other places.
Yeah, one of the words I picked up from what you were talking about then was refreshed, and that you used it a couple of times around the strategy. And I think that's a really good reminder that, you know, a wellbeing strategy is not a set and forget and just keep ticking off all the bits. It's constantly like a living document, isn't it? You're having to come back to it and reflect and refresh and try new things, a real trial and error.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because our strategy was awesome when it launched, but I think now we've sort of got to this place where we're a bit more mature in our journey that we need to take a step back and actually think, how can we make this even more inclusive and more diverse? And I think I mentioned that to you last week when we were talking around like the Pacifica model of well-being and taking into a whole heap of other, I guess, ethnicities and ways of viewing well-being, so that it's not just so set for a small population of our workforce. But I think, you can't start everywhere, so you sort of need to start with something, which AT has done, and then just continue to iterate that and build on it.
Yeah, it's such a good message to start with something, because I think that's often the other side of it, isn't it? It can seem really overwhelming, particularly if you're, say, reading through LinkedIn and all these different things that people are doing, going, oh my God, where do I even start?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's so much out there.
Do you still feel like that now? Is that still a thing you look at out there? Or do you feel like there's enough foundation now, you feel a better sense of, yep, we do this and then we're doing this and then we're doing this?
A bit of both. Definitely can get a bit overwhelmed, but I think, I think because we've got that foundation, we can be a bit more selective with what we're wanting to do it, and we can sort of add it to our backlog and then decide to look at it in the future. And I guess sort of building on that point and that question is that something that's worked really well for AT is that we've got a wellbeing calendar now. And so each month of the year, we focus on one wellbeing topic. So for example, March is all around sleep. And so we make sure all of our newsletter is all aligned with that, all of our different comms are around sleep, and then the next month we're talking about hybrid working, for example. So that's sort of been the easier way to help us dilute everything that's going on out there. So that's not saying we're not going to talk about different issues if we need to talk about them, but it's definitely made it a lot easier in my role in the wellbeing squad, knowing, okay, this is our one topic, so we're not getting overwhelmed with saying, talking about different things every day, because that's so overwhelming for our people as well.
I see there are some great questions coming through, so I'm just going to ask a couple of my last ones and then we'll move to some of these great questions. So one that I always find really interesting, and you and I've talked about this a little bit before, is, so I came from working in a public sector organization for quite a long time in leadership development, and one of the challenges we often had was the public going, how are you spending taxpayers' money? And probably my favorite was when people would email into the organization and say, why are you spending all this money on leadership development, we should be spending on something else, and then in the same breath say, but the leaders there are terrible. Well, you can't have it both ways. You actually have to develop leaders in order for them to have the capability. So it is a really necessary spend. But is that something you've come up against, and how do you manage that? I guess being in the spotlight, you're in a challenging role in that way.
Yeah, totally. We've got so many different pressures going on, and political pressure is something that, AT is definitely exposed to, and a lot of things that happen at AT do end up on the front page of the Herald. Lots of companies sort of joke about that, but for AT it's kind of reality. We do have to be super mindful about what we're spending money on, because at the end of the day, it's everyone's money, it's taxpayers' money. So I guess we come up with a lot of ways in which we don't have to spend money. So things like, referring back to that 15-25 minute meeting setting, the newsletter, the hub, some of our different partnerships where we bring in people to speak, we're able to do that for no to very little money. So I guess it's just being creative around our spend. We don't have to go out and do all the glitzy, glamour things. We can still have a pretty effective wellbeing program without doing that. Yeah, I guess we just have to plead our case sometimes and sort of show the return on investment of why we need to do certain things in the wellbeing space to get that leadership and executive buy-in. It's an ongoing battle.
And that return on investment is such an interesting one in the wellbeing space, isn't it? Because it's what data do you point to and what helps your case? And do you have particular data points that you use?
This is also an area that I would love AET to do even more in, but we do have so much data. I think that's a blessing and a curse, but so we need to sort of sift through that. But things like utilization of our different providers, utilization of our wellbeing consultants, we have our different engagement surveys. We run a pulse check every quarter. Throughout COVID, we had a wellbeing weather check-in, which is quite a cool way for people to see what's their weather today. If it's like a 5 out of 5, they're all sunny. If it's 1 out of 5, it's stormy. So we get a whole lot of different data points of things that we can sort of track to see what wellbeing is like in the workplace and sort of how that's improving or potentially going down over time, depending on what events are happening. So, we just have to be, selective in that data and figuring out what we're trying to read into and then present that to the powers that be.
I just got to call out, I love that language around the weather, feeling sunny or feeling stormy. Everyone can relate to that. It's so relatable. And it's not, how is your mental health? Because who wants to, who wants to respond to that? But that's such a cool way of doing it.
It was super effective. It was, we developed it during, I think, the very first lockdown. And it was sort of just an always on sort of pulse survey hosted on our intranet. And people could click into it as many times as they wanted. If they wanted to tell us 10 times that day how they're feeling, they could. They were just asking them some question around what their weather is. Do they want to speak to their people leader or their wellbeing consultant? And then we were able to add a few questions to that over time with the different lockdowns around training and support they're getting. It was sort of just an easy way for people to interact with us.
That's probably actually the following question I was going to have. So if someone rates stormy, let's say, for 5 days in a row, was there some kind of check-in method or was it entirely sort of led by the person themselves?
That specific one was more led by the person. So it was an anonymous pulse survey unless they had selected that they would like to be contacted by our wellbeing consultants or people leader. And if they had selected that, then one of the team would reach out to them and have that confidential discussion.
Looking forward, what do you think some of the big barriers and obstacles are ahead?
How do I choose? No. I think I keep coming back to it in lots of the questions, but around leadership, that's a massive one because our workforce is just over 2,000 people. And so it's huge. We can't expect that every single one of our comms or initiatives or whatever it is that we're rolling out is going to reach every single one of those people. So we are super reliant on those leaders. So just ensuring that they have the capability that they need. There's obviously a lot going on at the moment in terms of all these announcements from the mayor and all of the different political pressures that are going on, not just at AT, but right across the country. So sort of balancing all of that. Another way that we're also trying to get around engaging with all of our people is through our health, safety, wellbeing rep program. The safety team's just about to relaunch that later this month. And so we've made a really conscious effort to weave wellbeing into that entire 3-year plan. I think some organisations that I've been at in the past, wellbeing sort of just been tagged on at the end of those RIP programs and it's sort of just lip service, whereas AT is sort of taking a stance and actually know wellbeing is just as important as the health and safety aspect of that role and making sure they've got different things that they need to focus on in those 3 years so that then by the end of the 3 years, they'll sort of be a self-fulfilling group of about 90 reps able to help us on that wellbeing journey as well. So
that's an incredible number of reps. That's amazing. And I suppose that represents the size of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of people here.
Yeah. And then my last one there is, what would you suggest to others working through their wellbeing journey, particularly those who are still early on and trying to find their way and get a little bit of cut through, especially in terms of that leadership group? But what are some things you'd suggest?
I wrote a few notes, actually. I think one big one that I found super helpful in my role is just networking and just speaking to people. So there's a few different people on this call that I often have Teams calls with to see what they're doing. It's just constantly learning from others. I think that's something we're super fortunate to be able to do in AT, that we're not, everything that we're creating, we're not, it's not confidential. We're not trying to hide it from our competitors. So we're able to, yeah, really openly share what we're doing, and really open to feedback on other things that we could be looking at. And saying that, actually, that's another thing that AT has done, is that we've created a, what we call the Auckland Transport Advisory Panel, and we've got people sitting on that panel from each of our three external wellbeing providers, and we meet with them every 6 months just to talk around some of the initiatives that we've been doing in the wellbeing, culture, safety space, and then we hear from them around feedback on that, but also what all of their clients are doing as well, and what AT could potentially take on board. So yeah, we are really committed to iterating and improving our program. I think I touched on it before, but just trialing different things, because wellbeing is so unique to everyone. We're in a meeting recently, we compared it to like a cafe, like people can just pick and choose what they want. So I think that's why it's pretty awesome that AT has over 50 different things that people can tap into when and where they want. We can't just tell people when they need wellbeing support. So yeah, just constantly trialing different things. A way that we've been able to do that is during like World Wellbeing Week or Mental Health Awareness Week, we usually put on one different webinar or session or whatever it is each day of that week. And it's sort of in the past has ended up being a bit of a trial week for us. Maybe if someone suggested a financial wellbeing speaker, we trial them out during that week, and then we can decide if we want to do that in the future. We can gauge that on interest and participation. Another one is definitely getting the executive leadership team and senior leadership teams on board. They're pretty critical to the success of a program, especially at AT, we found. So yeah, we've brought them on the journey right from the beginning, which has been very, very helpful for us. And then I guess the last one is just around consistency, and not just doing wellbeing things and ticking the box and saying, oh yeah, that's done, is actually just always following through. So our wellbeing newsletter is every single month, and it's not going to go away. We need to be consistent with all these messages, make sure our leaders know that wellbeing's here to stay.
I love that, wellbeing's here to stay. It's perfect, because I think often, that's the thing that disappears off when businesses get really busy and there's a lot happening, isn't it? It's sort of the first thing to disappear, and yet probably the most needed during that time.
Yeah, totally.
Thanks again for listening today. It's been great to have you along. If you're keen to join the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, head to rowellbeing, that's rowellbeing.com, and follow the links to sign up. If you're in our community, thanks again, and we look forward to catching up with you really soon.